What is up in the House Sports fans? It's your boy King Kaz, and I'm joined by my good friend and the greatest co-host, JVZ. This is Sports Odds and Ends, COVID edition still.
Yeah. We're accelerating. I think COVID took its foot off the gas, and now it's kind of I don't want to say it's down the home stretch. It's getting a second wind. That's the analogy.
Kind of. All right. So let's kind of paint a picture, right? So we had the I guess what we'll call the initial outbreak that kind of spread around the world. We got to the point
tried to save America.
Yeah, we got to the point where we ended up having to shut down most major sports either in the middle or in the tail ends of their seasons and go into kind of a complete lockdown. Now, from there, we did have kind of in some of those initial stages of talks of shutdowns, we did have some speculation and confirmed cases of COVID-19 among some players in different sports and things like that. Everybody at this point has been on some kind of lockdown, and then you kind of get into weird federal and state things as opposed to like when things were to open back up, when things shouldn't have opened back up, yada, yada, yada. We started to see somewhat of a decline in cases, but then we had a lot of civil disrest in many different forms. It kind of started with people just being mad that they were on lockdowns and deciding to go to beaches and events anyway, which is probably what most of this current outbreak or redux that we're seeing is coming from, along with having protests against the police brutality and kind of social justice things that have been going on, which as much as I think it is necessary for us to do those things, is probably going to also add into the outbreak.
These people are more likely to be wearing masks.
Yes. Yeah. So kind of let's talk about safety things before we jump in. A lot of those initial things that we talked about, or that even the news has talked about being the cause of a potential second outbreak, were people protesting the things around the COVID stuff, wearing masks, social distancing, event cancellations, those kind of things. So a lot of those people who went to those protests did it without mask and did it without following certain rules. Now, obviously, in these other protests, social distancing is a little more laxed, but they have been wearing masks. They have been trying to follow some kind of precautionary things. That being said, we ended up in a space where it looked like most of our major sports were going to be coming back. We had some deals that had to be done, and those caused some rifts between players and owners, or players and the organizations in which they play for, being the Major League Baseball having kind of a big fallout, hockey having some discussions between players and owners and management. So to speak, and most of them had settled on dates and ways in which to continue following COVID-19 procedures while also putting themselves in a place to come back. And now...
So in order to do that, they have to now... We're going to take all these people and put them in a bubble. I guess everybody's using the term bubble now, even if it's not an actual physical bubble. But we're going to take all these people and put them in the bubble. Now we got to test them first. And I think, you know, the Premier League did a bunch of tests and revealed that nobody tested positive. So everybody gets to go in the bubble. That's them. But now we're kind of in that process for all these American sports and that are expecting to come back in a month or so. And we're getting a ton of positives, not a ton, but like, you know, we're not talking like one or two. We're talking about like, mm-hmm. you know, one or two for every team. And we're also seeing it for like college football, where they're only doing like spring workouts and stuff.
Well, so to add to that as well, a lot of these ones that we're going to talk about are also in places that have just seen larger resurgence of cases. You know, people that may have, or just more people starting to test positive in those places. So Florida, Texas,
Arizona,
and
I mean those are significant because, you know, Florida and Arizona were two places that were kind of targeted for potential bubble locations. I mean that's where the NBA and the MLS bubble locations are going to be, at the Wide World of Sports complex in Orlando. And so I think like both of those organizations are probably, you know, looking at it with wide eyes right now, like,
yeah,
worrying that like this,
because there was a lot of early talks in when we were talking about baseball coming back, as Arizona being one of those places that baseball could use due to the number of facilities there, and things like that. So now we are in this place where, due to like you said, so people are starting to do these tests on players. We had 30 players, well, 30 plus LSU players quarantined due to an outbreak. We've seen Texas players testing positive. Some of the Cowboy players, some of the Texans in the NFL have been testing positive. A lot of baseball players. This is now all causing a rift in what were these laid out plans for most of these sports who had kind of signed these deals, started to put you know, things into place. With now your players are testing positive, and now you're seeing higher and higher outbreak numbers in places that you were going to make, in quotes, your safe space for your players to live and work. So now you kind of almost have to go back to the drawing board, right?
In the case of baseball, like they don't have any deals in place yet. They're still haggling over that. Well, I wouldn't even call it haggling at this point. They're just firing shots at each other at this point. And, you know, and now even while they've been arguing about money, they haven't really been talking about any safety procedures. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been one of the biggest grievances that the players have had. And so, you know, just these outbreaks now make it even harder. It pushes them further apart in these talks. And so it's going to make all this harder. And I mean, just like it's already made all of our lives more difficult at this point. COVID is relentless, and so. Yeah, well, I mean, we'll have to wait and see, but we are going to be waiting and seeing for a long time. Mm-hmm. As we've discussed before, fans are not coming back for a while. And even if they're allowed to, I mean, there's a lot of people that would not attend one of these events because there's a, you know, unless there's like a vaccine. Yeah, I mean, especially for indoor events, then it's basically our next set of stories is going to be stories about power dynamics, because one of the stories that I saw during the week, and I couldn't find it exactly, but I think there was a team somewhere around a college football team somewhere around the Midwest that actually made its players sign. Sign waivers for COVID, and because these are quote unquote voluntary workouts in the spring, but we all know that voluntary workouts aren't really voluntary. If you don't show up for voluntary workouts, then you're seen as somebody who's not willing to do what it takes to play for the team or keep your spot or whatever. That's always the thing with voluntary workouts. So it's always shaky on those grounds. And So to kind of jump right into that, we've got the UCLA football team, who is currently very upset with their management. They don't trust the university and all the officials involved to be able to keep them safe in the midst of all this. And then there's a severe lack of trust, but maybe some of these players are starting to, go ahead.
I was just looking at this story, the UCLA story, just last week, along with the Mike Gundy story, which I know you guys will touch on in a minute. 30 players from the UCLA football team, just for folks at home, most college football rosters have around 105 and 110 players. So this is a pretty sizable amount of their roster, signed a document demanding that the university have a third party oversee, an independent third party oversee team activities during the practices and all of that, because according to the LA Times, that they are reporting a severe lack of trust between the team and the players and head coach Chip Kelly in how the football organization is handling the health situation that they would have to go to. These students are coming back to school. They're starting their practices for football in the fall, ideally. And it's looking like it would take a lot for a college football player, not just one, but 30, for them to sign a document like this. It would take a lot. This is actually pretty significant for 30 players to say, we really don't like the situation here.
Yeah, and when one player speaks out, then it kind of just depends on how important that player is. Otherwise, the team can kind of just steamroll them. But when you get 30 of them together to band together and kind of unionize in a way, then it becomes much harder for the team to push back, because if they decide, you know, to ignore these players, then you've got 30 angry players. If they decide to hit back at these guys for speaking out, then they have to hit back against 30 of them. So they can do a much better job of protecting themselves from a retaliation standpoint if you have 30 people uniting together. Yeah, we can see, like, in college football, where in college sports in general, where these players are they're exploited more than a lot of other athletes, because they're not getting paid for all this, and they're being asked to in this case, they're being asked to risk their lives for pretty much no compensation, because, you know, they get housing and they get tuition, but all the classes now are going to be online for most universities in the fall. So it's like they're not even getting that compensation that we've thought of as being paltry before. So they don't even get that now. And so now they're being asked to play and risk a bunch of money just to make a bunch of college football executives money. And so this is...
Even like on the school thing, right? Like that has been a thing of contention in these times, because it is now making people realize how much they are actually paying these universities for little to nothing, because most of these kids are like, hey, part of my tuition is room and board. I'm not getting room and board. Can I have that money back? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it's we're going down a realm where younger people are starting to look at these institutions, and not just from the sports thing side of it anymore, right? They're starting to look at these institutions and how that money is made and what they do with that money, right? Because there is was it LSU? I think it was LSU, right? Because LSU is the one that's kind of been in the news a lot with the player outbreaks and what they do with their money, because part of the discussion about LSU was how more of the money isn't spent on the school itself, but spent on promoting the school as a place to be.
Yeah, and on like their new like $50-some million locker room. I might have that number wrong, but it's but we talked about it on this show about like the locker room versus the fancy locker room for the football players versus the library for all the other students.
Yeah,
and
oh, and you know, I think it was it might have been Colbert or one of them was doing a report on it, and they mentioned the locker room, but then they also talked about how they have a giant lazy river that spells out LSU.
Oh yeah, that was Hasan Minhaj for Patriot Act this week, and
so
yeah, just... you shared me that clip, but yeah, that was for one of their athletic facilities, and like none of these people are even going to be on campus to be able to use this lazy river.
Yeah,
and and it's. So, I mean, we're kind of in a new age of skepticism because since everybody's been forced to change their habits, you know, when it comes to work, when it comes to recreation and all that, everybody's kind of reevaluating what's important, especially now that everybody's going to be short on money. And now it's time to reevaluate where is your money going and what is actually important. And Sports is not that important in the grand scheme of things, and so you know, all these players not only are they risking their lives, but also you know we're just starting to learn more about like the long term implications of people who do catch COVID and and end up hospitalized and. You know, like what's it going to do to your lungs long term? And if you're an athlete, that's really important. Whether if you get permanent lung damage, then that affects your ability to play athletic sports. Possibly to the point where you could go from being a star athlete to a non-star, or go from an athlete to a non-athlete. There's a lot at stake for these people who aren't being compensated right now. So it's good that college players, even though they seem like they're perpetually in a position of being on the wrong end of power dynamics, they're finding out that if they unite with each other, they can shift that balance of power. So Chip Kelly has agreed to the demands of the players. And what they're asking for is being implemented at UCLA. By players uniting together, they can enact meaningful changes against the executives who seek to exploit them.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing kind of the same thing play out a little bit with Mike Gundy and Chuba Hubbard at Oklahoma State University. That this is not a COVID story. This is related
social
to
justice.
Yeah, this is a social justice story. But Mike Gundy, Coach Mike Gundy, was I think either he or somebody else he knew posted a photo to Instagram with him wearing a shirt for the OAN network, which is a right wing. I guess news network is putting it kind of giving probably too much credit, but this is a network that's been very outspoken against the Black Lives Matter movement, and so Chuba Hubbard, star running back for the team, took offense to that and posted publicly saying that he wouldn't stand for it, and soon after that he was backed by his teammates, and I think that's part of what was important on top of the fact that he's a very important player for the team in general. So, because of that, the team had to take notice, and then Mike Gundy had to meet with him. They had to hash out their differences, or at least some of them, behind closed doors. And then they came out later that day, with a somewhat awkward video where, Hubbard apologized for taking his grievances public. And then Gundy kind of didn't apologize, but did promise some changes. And then later after that, he released his own separate video acknowledging that, you know, or at least claiming that he didn't understand the significance of the shirt and the kind of feelings that it brought out of these people until he spoke to these to his players. And now he does understand, and now he's, you know, quote unquote, disgusted by it, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, you might think like all of this started over a stupid little shirt. Like it shouldn't be that big a deal, but you know, Mike Gundy actually has feuded with people over shirts before. So, I mean, I think he doesn't really have a leg to stand on there. He has a history with potentially using racial slurs before. So this is an issue that he needs to hash out with his team if he wants his team to trust him as an authority figure. And so I think the team banding together and forcing him to take notice of this, I think was another demonstration of power from college football players. Maybe not the first time we've seen this, but I think hopefully more college players take notice and see that they can enact change if they work together on this, if they stand united on these things that are important to them. Because it's all too easy for these big, rich organizations to exploit them.
Yeah, I like the take on it, especially by the player, right? You have to, right now, I think there is a sense usually of like you pick your battles, right? I think right now we live in a time where you take every battle to a certain degree, right? Because everybody to a certain degree is paying attention to everything, especially situations like this, right? And for most people, they're going to be like, it's just a shirt. When you kind of go back to the original thing, right? They'll say it's just a shirt. Where it's like, no, it shows kind of your leaningness one way or the other. When you support organizations that, to the most part, and most people will say it's an opinion, that spew just hateful shit. So when you do that, you kind of are showing your allegiance that way. And right now, like you might be kind of wrong. Like DJM says, like, word of advice, talk to black people. And I think this kind of harkens back to the one thing that I've been telling everyone, and I see a lot of people kind of echoing the same thing right now, is just listen, learn, and educate yourself about all things of walks of life that are different from your own. Because when you start to do those things, you grow your perspective, right? And then from there, you can choose to say, hey, I still support these things, and that'll make people change the way that they look at you, as they should. You know, for me, it's also been learning about how other people are mistreated in this country as well, and learning, I don't know, this is a time of learning. And if you aren't willing to do that, if you aren't willing to take those steps, then these other things, like for Mike Grundy, are things that you can also call out, right? These other spews of just inaccuracy against other humans and people, and this one of just straight out racism, is going to start to tell a picture of who you are as a person, right? Because there's a kind of a bit I like in this article where it's like, you know, we're doing the dog and pony show right now, right? He apologizes to his player. He kind of makes the de facto statement and follows up on it, but it's what you do after those things that matter.
Yeah, it's like I don't want to say I don't care about like this allegation from 1989 that, you know, he used a racial slur when he was playing against another player from the University of Colorado. Like, okay, maybe that's okay, that's awful if he did it, but also, you know, like I'm like, what is he going to do in the year 2020? What is he going to do in the year 2021? I don't want to say that, like, you know, what he did in 1989 doesn't matter, but I do want to say what he chooses to do in the future is more important. People do change, and we have to give them room to change. We don't have to give them forgiveness for the stuff in the past, but we do want to push people to change for the better going forward. And I think his players pushed him to at least acknowledge their struggles, the shit that they have to put up with day in and day out. The fact that they have to go on social media and see their coach, who is supposed to be a figure that's protecting them and guiding them through life, to see him promote a network that has done the exact opposite for them. That sucks, and he should hear about it when that sucks. And so he's going through that process, saying all the formulaic things right now, and now we watch and wait. One other thing I would add to the whole talking to people thing, I would say, you know, Black people have been talking for years about this. So even before you go and talk to Black people, maybe go and talk to Google first, and see the things that they've been saying, the things that they've been writing, because none of this is new. It's just there's an extended spotlight on this right now. So do that first. Then you'll probably have some questions, and you'll probably have some questions about experiences. And that's when you go talk to the aggrieved people in this situation, the Black community. And then, you know, and then you can come in from a place of, instead of coming in from a place where you're just asking inflammatory questions, and you can kind of get a sense of the background first before you go in, and then you can have a more meaningful discussion, rather than going from a place of like, well, why can't I just say all lives matter? Well, that's been answered over and over and over again. You can learn about that first and not immediately put it on Black people to educate you. I think in that case, that's kind of been what's so disappointing. Every time you see something like this, it's like, why haven't you done the work to educate yourself before? Now it's on his players to teach him. But at least when that happened, he was receptive to it, and publicly came out and acknowledged his mistakes afterwards. So we'll wait and see, just like everything else. We've got some more stories about exploitation here. We're not really doing these in any particular order. I mean, some of these are bad and getting better, and some of these are just bad.
I jumped in with the Chip Kelly UCLA story, and I kind of gummed up the works.
That one works with the COVID stuff, almost so many of our stories nowadays are either in two categories. They're either in the racial justice category or the COVID category. Now we've got more exploitation stories, in this case with baseball and the way they treat Latin American players, especially really, really young Latin American players. What we're talking about is young as 12 years old. They're not allowed to be signed until they're 16. But that doesn't stop these teams from going out there and giving, you know, handshake agreements with young 12-year-olds and their families. If they're really poor 12-year-olds, then they, you know, sometimes they need money, but if they kind of have an agreement with the team, they know there's more money coming later. And that leads them to potentially borrowing against these players' potential earnings. And sometimes the people that they borrow from are shady. And so whenever these teams break these agreements, when these players turn 16, that puts these families in a really, really tough situation. And this has been such, this isn't just like an isolated case of one or two times this happened. This is starting to become a regular thing. And according to a former scout, there may be an FBI investigation going on about this. They haven't confirmed or denied that, but Rudy Santin, a former scout who used to run a baseball academy in the Dominican Republic, recently died from a heart attack. But after he had a recent stroke, he wanted to make sure somebody knew about this before he died. And so he blew the whistle on this. And yeah, I mean, we don't see a whole lot about how, like, we see the end result of a bunch of players from the Caribbean and from Latin America coming to play baseball in the United States. And it's, we see the end result of that. We don't see the lead up to that and what gets involved. We kind of assume everything's above board because all these teams are quote unquote American companies. But that doesn't mean everything is above board. And we've seen how much baseball teams are willing to exploit their players, even their top players, over the last couple of years, and how much bending over backwards they'll do to avoid even paying them what they're worth. Imagine what they do when we're talking about, you know, poor kids from countries that people aren't really paying attention to. Imagine what they're doing when the eyes are not looking. And so this is just another example of that. And in this case, they're exploiting kids, so that makes it even more awful. So we'll have to see what comes out of this investigation.
It's just rough. That's like that whole situation you painted is just so rough.
Yeah, and because it's, you know, in one case, we were talking about these college football players. Like, they've already been assembled into a team, so they know each other. They can connect with each other. If one of them speaks out, his teammates can unite behind him, and they can all speak out together. Mm. But, you know, what can one poor Latin American family do to speak out when, you know, when a team is coming in and exploiting them, or when, you know, the local loan shark is coming to them? Like, they don't have a huge network of other Latin American player families to unite with to fight back against these loan sharks or against these MLB teams. Like, this is, they're alone on this. They're isolated on this, and there's nobody to protect them. Unless the FBI steps in and punishes these teams somehow for this. So they're kind of stuck, and that really sucks for them. And hopefully more eyes on this can embarrass some of these teams that are going through this practice. On the draft front, because of COVID, some of the teams are going to undrafted free agents and some of their later draft picks and trying to get them to sign contracts for the year 2021 instead of the year 2020. The point in doing that is that by signing 2021 contracts instead, that delays when these players hit free agency by a year. And we've already talked in the past about how just absurdly long the initial contracts are for baseball players and for like rookie baseball players, young baseball players, they don't get their first free agency period until they're like, you know, 28, 29, 30 years old or so. And so now they're trying, you know, now they're trying to use COVID as an excuse to delay that by even one more year. And it's just that there's no opportunity to exploit that these MLB teams won't try to, try to take. It's amazing. Just every time one of these stories comes out, it's almost like, I can't believe you did that, but also I can't believe I'm surprised by this. So it's never trust baseball owners, period. If there's anything that we talk a lot about other sports and the bullshit they do, and maybe some of those, that bullshit, like we don't see yet, but yeah, when it comes to baseball owners, for right now, it seems like they're the worst of the worst. Maybe I shouldn't say that because we're about to talk about the New Orleans Saints and their role in the Catholic Church sex abuse cover-up. They previously claimed that that they were involved in this, but in just a PR sense, and they were contacted after the scandal broke, and then after the scandal broke, they were contacted by the church, and they lent their advice to the church for how to kind of recover from a PR standpoint. But now a Sports Illustrated report is showing that their involvement was a lot more active than they claimed. So it's not only that they were involved, but the fact that they lied to everybody about how much they were involved. The Gail Benson, the owner of the Saints, and also the owner of the New Orleans Pelicans, is, you know, a very devout member of the Catholic Church, and a very active member who's, you know, donated for a lot of things, and but also active in the sense that it seems like the team itself reached out to the church to get involved in this, and they were advising the church long before they released their list of what was at the time 57 accused clergymen that were involved in sexual abuse. They helped curate the list. They, you know, they took an active role in that and initiated themselves into that. Meanwhile, you know, these are sports organizations, and sometimes we tell them to stick to sports. So, like, why are you injecting yourself into this thing that is very, very serious? Why are you helping the Catholic Church cover up their abuse of young children? This is a very, very serious story, and I don't know what the Saints were thinking when they chose to get involved in this, and you know, it's one that can very seriously harm the image of the Saints going forward. It's just, you know, these kids were already going through enough with an organization as powerful as the Catholic Church exploiting them. And now you've got an NFL team joining forces with them to protect that large organization that really has no trouble defending itself. So it's just, I don't know. It's just sad.
I think it's one of those things where I think people, unfortunately, follow their bottom line, right? They tend to. I think this harkens back to really early episodes of the show where we say, you know, follow people's money and you'll see their allegiance, right? Being the Saints, they probably get a lot of backing from the Catholic Church, right? And for some people, that's going to be a really stupid way of connecting those things, but you got to realize.
There is like at least a loose connection there.
Yeah.
And there's like, you know, and then on top of that, with Gil Benson being a a member, like the two organizations have worked together in the past on other things. So it's not like they're, no, it's a, we're not just drawing connections because of the name. It's
right.
They have been involved with each other.
So, and you just got to look at that money spread and the factor of what people want, right? A lot of these premier American sports organizations want to paint themselves as these family things, right? And the Catholic religion is a big thing in America. And if you can have be a team that is backed by the Catholic Church, like, that gets you a lot of fans. So you show your allegiance, right? Like, but you're doing it at the wrong time in the wrong way. Like, this is definitely, especially with where you already are as an organization, with one of your premier players having a giant misstep publicly, to do anything else in the realm that, like, I just wish more of these organizations just had one person that would be like, that's that, if that gets out, right? Because I bet you most of these people are just like, oh, you know, if we do this, that doesn't matter, it won't come back to us. But they don't realize how hard people are digging right now. Like, there are going to be little to no things that you can't hide, like, especially when you're a major organization.
I mean, they're not a public organization, but
I don't think it matters right now.
I feel like if you are an organization that serves a very large group of people, like, mm-hmm. you shouldn't be allowed to hide anything.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of, like, you know, who you're going to pick in the draft, like, you know, but like, you know, at this point, you're not technically a public service, but you are effectively a public service. And you should take that more seriously, and you should be more transparent about these things. If you get caught with your hand, you know, where it shouldn't be, then you need to, you know, own up to it, own up to everything, and not try to cover it up, and don't try to get involved in other people's cover-ups as well. And especially ones that, you know, that you should have nothing to do with. Unless there is something more insidious involved in the story that they are trying to cover up even more. But for now, it just seems like they got involved where they shouldn't have gotten involved. So it's, I don't know, just another example of, you know, in this case, two powerful organizations teaming up to squash powerless people. But, you know, because... You know, because the media does an excellent job of reporting these things, be revealed for all of us to see, and all of us to hold these organizations accountable. USA Sled Hockey is undergoing their own sexual abuse scandal. In this case, the hockey program failed to protect a couple accusers from. Even after these accusations were levied, they failed to protect the accusers from the abusers that they were accusing. They when it comes to, you know, national sports programs, national teams, USA Basketball, USA, USA Gymnastics was the biggest scandal recently. USA Sled Hockey to the list of that, and we're seeing, you know, so many of these young kids coming up and getting exploited by adults, and, you know, and then when these accusations come out, instead of acting on the accusations, they do a piss poor job of protecting them, like, even to the point where, like, simple things like you know, like, one of the accused kids was a promising young athlete. That's why they chose to protect him. And even something simple like, you know, the young woman who had levied the accusation. Both of those got scheduled for the same event, and they failed to notify her that she was going to be in the same place as her abuser. And, you know, simple things like that. It was just a huge pattern of at best neglect. And so it's, I think we, it just seems more and more like we need an overhaul of the entire system. If this is going to keep happening in program after program, in sport after sport.
We do. And the problem is, and I say this a lot, is like kind of accountability things. And this isn't as serious as that situation, but I was talking to someone about like kind of working in a kind of business organization, right? It's when you have a problem with someone who's in a higher up position, the thing is, you don't always know, right? Because that person is put in charge of you. And there's usually no counterbalance to that, right? It's there's that person, there's the person that they answer to, and then there's the person that that person answers to, and it only goes up from there, right? Yeah. But you, on sometimes kind of the lowest rung, have nobody to turn to except for other people who are in your same situation, who their only accountability factor is there's one person that is in charge of you, right? Where there should be like some kind of, there should be some kind of alternative. For most places, it's supposed to be an HR department, a human resources department. But half of the time,
a whistleblower line or something like that.
Right. But half of the time, those people do not work in or around the location that you are in. And it takes way too long to go through that process of saying this person is shitty at their job, no matter what it is, whether they're a predator or just a shitty boss who fucking does things that they shouldn't. It's always so much more of a circumvent to go around to get to someone who can now hold that person accountable, right? Because even when you use a whistleblower line or the HR department, what happens is your allegation is taken in by a third party that you don't know and cannot then also hold accountable. And then it is given to a version of a higher up of that person. And then that person is then directly talked to by someone. You never really get to share your side of the story unless somebody in this higher rung decides to believe you, right?
Yeah.
And because that person gets to spin the story, which is something that we always talk about, they get to express their version of the events that happened.
Yeah. And I mean, the HR exists to protect the company. It doesn't exist to protect.
True. Yes.
It doesn't exist to protect the workers. And, you know, you try to go through these official procedures, and then what they end up doing is they end up calling the New Orleans Saints to come help them with their PR efforts. And so to kind of spin this and make this story go away or cover it up or whatever, it's so hard when there's no like outside outlet. And that's why like the best thing to do at this point is to just go to the press, because unless you can go out and publicly embarrass the organization, expecting them to reform themselves from within is seems like it's too much of an ask at this point. Because you know, if they can't even do simple things to protect you from the person that that abused you, then that's just the ultimate failure right there. This isn't our only hockey story related to abuse. You know, we've got, in this case, Canada, in the Canadian Hockey League, there's a class action lawsuit for the junior programs. This is related to hazing instead, but it's you know, more of the same. It's sexual abuse. It's hazing among older stars, exploiting younger stars. And trying to use hazing as an excuse for that, it's amazing, not just in like sports, but just in, you know, in fraternity culture and all that, and how like how much the definition of hazing gets stretched to include just more and more awful shit. Like we're not talking about like, you know, making somebody carry bags for the veteran players. It's like it goes, you know, much worse than that. It goes to the point of sexual abuse, sexual assault, and they,
there's supposed to be this lightheartedness to hazing as kind of a sense of paying your dues, right? And that for me is where I am okay with it. I'm kind of okay in the paying your dues thing, like you were talking about, right? Maybe you have to be the first one to practice. Maybe you're supposed to be the last one to leave. Maybe you like do things where like you like there was a thing there where when I played Little League, we set up the practice stuff, right? We set up the nets and things like that and all that kind of stuff, right? And to a certain extent, right, that isn't always necessarily considered a hazing, but that's kind of a form of it, right?
I mean, that's in a way that, or like small practical jokes and stuff, that's where the definition of hazing, like that's the extent of it to me. Like all this other bullshit that like people have extended it to, like none of that should be part of that realm of hazing anymore. Like once people are getting the shit kicked out of them by their teammates, like no, that doesn't qualify as hazing. Like, you know, being forced to strip down naked and go run somewhere, like that's not hazing anymore. That's sexual abuse to me. So like that's it's, you know, like getting your car popcorned, like that's hazing. That's you know, so it's you know, I think some people use it to just, some people use hazing as an excuse to live out their exploitative fantasies, and there is nobody to protect their victims at this point, and except the press, it seems like, except, you know, going through these class action lawsuits. You know, I mean, I'm glad these people are feeling brave enough to speak out, because otherwise we wouldn't hear about this at all. And these organizations just cover this up and then it would just keep going and going and without any sense of stopping. I don't have anything to say other than we wait and see and hope that things work out for the best. Hopefully by shedding a light on it, we can let everybody know that this is happening. There are people in sports that are trying to take an active role in making things better. We've seen a lot recently with the protests. I think one person that kind of gets neglected in all these discussions, and that's because she's a WNBA player, or a former WNBA player. I would suggest everybody go through and look up the story of Maya Moore, who was, you know, at the top of the WNBA when she chose to retire. We're talking like, you know, Michael Jordan retiring to play baseball, that kind of level of relative to her peers. And she chose to retire while she was at the top of the game to get an innocent man free. And she decided that this was more important than playing her sport. I think this is, and this was a voluntary thing to retire to do this. This wasn't like, you know, Colin Kaepernick, you know, getting blackballed for taking a stand. This was Maya Moore deciding that this was more important than playing basketball. And there's a really nice ESPN article about this that we'll put in the show notes. I think the article will probably do it better justice than us talking about it here. But But I think it's a really good story. And just another item on the list of things that the WNBA has done to put themselves at the forefront of various social justice movements. And because we don't have a whole lot of eyes on the WNBA, these stories can kind of go ignored. And I don't think we even talked about this at the time, even though this is a huge story in the context of the sport itself, when you've got one of the top stars just choosing to stop playing. So I think we need to do a better job of covering the sport and covering the WNBA, not just because they are deserving of our attention, but because they are doing amazing things on the front of social justice for everybody.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant's getting involved. He and Degree, the deodorant company. Mm-hmm. They've donated $1 million so far to various organizations related to kids and social issues. Lewis Hamilton, the famed racing driver, is and I guess currently the only black driver in Formula One right now, but also the best driver in Formula One, is donating money to promote diversity in motorsport.
Yeah, I really liked this one. I was looking at this when you put it in here, and I really like a lot of what this organization is laying out as what they want to do, right? Because we talk about a lot of these, and a lot of them don't really put in the article like what it is that they're looking to do, how they're looking to do it, and all those kind of things. But this kind of gives a really detailed thing. This is like an article worth reading. It really gives like a really detailed thing about what it is that they are trying to do by helping to further
STEM education for young black people with backgrounds like his. Formula One racing especially is a very I forgot what the right term for it, but it's like it's a very nepotistic organization where like so many of the drivers are kids of other drivers, of former drivers, or people that are backed by other rich people because it's so expensive to get into the sport. In order to drive, you have to, like, as you mentioned last week with the NASCAR stuff, you have to get into like the kart racing series. You have to start at a very young age, and then that's where you kind of get recruited. But those are very expensive hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's ones that, you know, a lot of poor black kids don't really get a chance to do. And Hamilton's family had to give up a lot in order for him to have the opportunities that he did. And so many other potential drivers didn't get that kind of backing. And in the case with, you know, a lot of, I guess, minorities in general, when it comes to all employments, you kind of have to be better than everybody else, and not just better, but noticeably better than everybody else in order to get the same kind of opportunities. And in his case, just, you know, so much better. I mean, he's better than everybody else, and he still gets shit. And it's good to see him giving back and reaching out. And so it's not just, you know, getting more black racing drivers, but also more people involved in the rest of the scene as well. More mechanics, more crew chiefs, mm-hmm. more,
and that's
et cetera. And trying to use STEM education as a vehicle for that, or using motorsport as a vehicle for STEM education, as a vehicle for getting more black people involved in motorsports, just that cyclical path. With the sport being such a generational thing, it's like, you know, how do you continue? How does the one lone black person in the sport continue that generational cycle when he had to work so hard to get in there in the first place, to get his foot in the door? Like, it's tough, but there is a path there. And so hopefully that's something that we'll see dividends in the next 10 or 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
though. It's, I mean, that kind of representation is important. Like, I know some people look at representation or look at diversity and see them as just buzzwords, or maybe they see it as tokenism or whatever. And it's more important than that. It's important to see people who look like you in places that you didn't necessarily think they would be, like, from a traditional sense. Because once you start seeing those people, then you start seeing yourself in that position in the future. It takes trailblazers like these to show you that that's possible. And then once you see the first one, then you see more coming in, and it takes time. But the kids, the teenagers of today that are looking up to Lewis Hamilton now, and see themselves as being potentially in Lewis Hamilton's position 10 years from now, those are the future. On that note, I want to skip a little bit to the NBA. The Pistons hired Troy Weaver as their new general manager. DJM has some thoughts on that, but Troy Weaver is a black general manager now. He's on a very short list of black general managers. A growing list, but it's a short list. And in a league that is overwhelmingly black, so many of the executives and decision makers and coaches are still white. And so we're starting to see that change. DJM, what are your thoughts on Troy Weaver as a as just an executive in general?
I think that in recent times, the senior advisor to Pistons owner Tom Gores, Ed Stefanski, has made some pretty savvy decisions in recent years. It's been pretty clear this season and last year that the Detroit Pistons are starting to go through a rebuild there. Really rebuilding their franchise from the ground up after the Stan Van Gundy era. And for a while, after Stan Van Gundy was relieved of his duties as president of basketball operations, for the year, for the 2020 season, the Pistons did not have a general manager. But there was a story in The Athletic from James Edwards, the Pistons beat writer, in that in 2018, after Stan left, the Pistons actually requested to interview Troy Weaver the first time around, and Oklahoma City pulled him from that interview request. So he's been their guy. He's been Ed Stefanski's guy for quite some time. Troy Weaver, as some basketball fans out there might know, has been the assistant general manager to Sam Presti at the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he's been with the Oklahoma City Thunder organization for the last 12 years. He's been credited with his time working at Syracuse University for being the one that recruited and signed Carmelo Anthony, which led to their national championship. He was the one that said to Sam Presti to draft Russell Westbrook 4th overall. And also, he was the talent evaluator for James Harden and when the Thunder drafted James Harden. So one of the big things that Troy Weaver has been lauded for is his eye for talent. And that, as a Pistons fan, has me somewhat excited. But I do have to ask this question. Going back, I've said a bunch of times on the podcast that Detroit sports has been really bad for the last couple of years. Yeah. Really bad. And the hiring of Troy Weaver, on one hand, got a lot of Pistons fans really excited. But it made me, in my cynical, broken brain, think of another Detroit sports general manager. And that is Bob Quinn of the Detroit Lions. Now, Bob Quinn, who has done a discussable job as general manager of the Lions, he, before coming to Detroit, worked for the New England Patriots. He was the head of pro personnel. He had worked in their scouting department for many years before becoming the Lions general manager. But he worked under Bill Belichick, who is the overlord of the Patriots organization. And it made me think, given how the Lions under Bob Quinn haven't exactly had the best player personnel decisions, the best front office decisions, Matt Patricia, it kind of makes me a little skittish. And it makes me wonder, and JVZ, I'd love your opinion on this. Is it possible that Troy Weaver was really just a guy behind the guy that is Sam Presti from the Oklahoma City Thunder? Do you think it's more of that case, or do you think that it's more of a case of Troy Weaver really ascending to this role because of his own merits?
I think when it comes to like the relationship between general managers and assistant general managers and scouts and all that, I think that's something that needs to be covered more, just because it's kind of hard to, I think we as fans just kind of hear like, oh, this person's a candidate now. And also a lot of that comes from leaking to reporters. So then, like, you know, that's the exchange that happens. This was actually talked about on the Pat McAfee podcast. But like, you know, when you ask like, why do people leak stuff to agents, or why do agents leak stuff? Why do general managers leak stuff to reporters? And so when you leak something, then your name kind of gets thrown into some of these discussions for like, who is the next big person, the next big candidate on this list, or that this person has been fired from the job. This team is now looking for candidates to replace them. Potential leading candidates could be, and then here's a list of like five people. And so like one of the ways to get on that list is to be friendly with these people that are reporting. That's the most cynical outlook of this. But the other thing is that I think assistant general managers and like people who work for like the main decision maker, they're the ones doing like a lot of the heavy nitty gritty work. They're actually the ones doing a lot of the negotiation as well, even if the initial phone calls come from the people in charge. But you know, working out the contracts, working out the scouting, like that gets handled by some of the people lower, by like the Troy Weavers of the world. So when their names get out there, maybe part of it might be due to reporters just sticking their names out there, but the other part is because these guys are used to working with other people in the community. You don't see a whole lot of general manager names kind of come out of the blue. Every so often you get like an agent that gets hired to be a general manager instead, but even then that's because of the relationships that they work out with the other general managers. It's it's like lawyers switching from, you know, working defense to working prosecution. You know, it's all part of the same community. It's just kind of different sides that you're negotiating on. Either you're negotiating for a player, you're negotiating on the team side. As long as you're sort of a part of that family, then people know you. I don't think of this hiring as like an out of the blue thing.
In Kaz, I'd love to get your opinion on this one too. I'm going to make another Detroit sports comparison. The Red Wings are also going through a rebuild. They have a good shot at the number one overall pick in this upcoming draft. They recently hired former Red Wings captain, hero of the franchise, Steve Yzerman, as their general manager. This was not quite what people would expect. He was more than just the hometown guy, the captain of the team for the 20 years. He had built a team, a Stanley Cup contending championship level team with the Tampa Bay Lightning in the NHL before returning to Detroit. And The Troy Weaver hire has been like the Steve Yzerman hire in a way, in that I personally have not seen a front office hire this highly praised for one of the teams in my hometown in a long, long time, excluding Steve Yzerman. Cass, I would like to ask you if you have any thoughts on that. Just the idea of how do you feel when you see one of your teams make a hire, whether it's a coaching hire or a front office hire or a sign or a trade or a draft or whatever, and it's just universally praised? Because one example is ESPN and NBA analyst Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah.
Was one of the first to come out and say this was a great hire for the Pistons. However, then one of the Pistons beat writers pointed out, oh, yeah, Kendrick Perkins was drafted by the Thunder. So, yeah, I'm guessing he probably thinks it was a good hire.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I tend to find these things kind of in the realm of like, kind of like JVZ said, right? There's a system in place where a lot of these people tend to kind of encircle each other, right? And I think for certain media people, it's kind of you got to stand by your guy. And I don't know why this is a thing, but like I think even outside of the buddy system, you kind of have to pick somebody, and you kind of have to like be like, yeah, like, oh, that guy, he's the guy for this job. His system, those players, kind of weird. You always have to pick these allegiances in these realms for some reason, and you have to stand by them until it fails, and then you get to be like, you know what, the front office held him back, they didn't let him do this or they didn't let him do that, and sometimes that might be a thing, but I don't know. There are times where like people make these decisions, and I'm like, where did this guy come from? I don't even remember who he was an assistant for. Who is he? Like, I think when the Giants coach retired and the guy they hired to replace, I was like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, I was like, I don't know who he is. And I had to wait until I saw on Instagram, they were like, you know, from the Giants account, trying to praise him and go through all his accolades as an assistant and all these things that he did. And it's like those things, and teams do those things for people like me who go, who the fuck is this guy and why do I care? Like, because half the time, I think for most fly by night fans, they don't care because they don't know who these guys are.
Yeah. We don't know.
At the same time, Kaz, mm-hmm. when in the case of Troy Weaver, this was very, very different. It was universal. Where, say, Matt Rhule, I guess that's the guy, Matt Rhule, for the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
For the Carolina Panthers, right. Sorry. I think he was the one where it was kind of the same, where it was like everybody said, great hire. Great hire. Great hire. It was universal. That's different. Like, even if you're a fly-by-night sports fan, you've got to say to yourself, oh, wow, that's different. You know, like,
if everybody's happy, loves this guy.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. I just feel like sometimes you're just not allowed to question it, you know? Like, there are times where it's just like, who is that guy? Like, I just want to be like, who is he? Where the fuck did he come from?
But you know, when I looked it up, when I started reading up on Troy Weaver, and it was like, oh, he was the guy that said, guys, no, really, we need to draft Russell Westbrook. No, seriously, we should draft him. And also was like, yeah, James Harden, we should draft this guy too. Seriously. And it was like, okay, all right, maybe he actually does have an eye for talent. And like, Pistons need talent. Like, now. So I guess I'm hopeful as a Detroit sports fan that
that's all you can ever be when a front office change happens. Is you're only allowed to be hopeful until you realize you might have a problem in other places. Like for me with the Knicks, right? They hire all these people. Some of them I think are decent human beings, except our fucking owner is a piece of fucking garbage. So you can't get over that hurdle.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. It's like sometimes you hire people that were employed by somebody else, and the hope is that your organization is better than theirs, than their former one, so you can rehabilitate this guy. Like the Kings have done that with Luke Walton. Maybe the Lakers were just a really tough organization. Maybe coaching LeBron is tough. So maybe if you bring Luke Walton here to Sacramento, which they did without interviewing anybody else, maybe if you do that, then he'll do better here than he did elsewhere. Maybe this general manager that has been fired by these other organizations, maybe it's not their fault. It was the organization's fault. I think Troy Weaver is a different situation because this is like his first job, which on its own raises questions. He doesn't have the experience of some of these other guys, but because he was an assistant general manager, he effectively does have general manager experience, at least when it comes to the nitty-gritty work. He's, you know, being around that organization for 12 years, he's had to have done a lot of the legwork. So now you put him in charge and maybe he's directing other people doing that legwork. The talent scouting part is the most important part. So if he can handle that, then hopefully he'll do okay. But even then, the draft itself is always a crapshoot. You can do your scouting and the best data available and still end up surprised by the people you draft. Or maybe the guy who gets drafted two spots below ends up becoming a much bigger superstar than anybody thought. I mean, like so 12 teams Gundy passed
had
on
that a couple of times.
Like 12 teams passed on Giannis Antetokounmpo. So it's, you know, you never know. And all you can do is do the best you can. And he had an amazing run with, you know, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden. But he was also part of the organization that dismantled that team. So it's, you know, a hit and miss, probably more hits than misses. And especially the last couple of years.
Steven Adams too. You got Steven Adams.
Yeah, Steven Adams. I mean, a lot of great players. And the better you draft, the harder it is to keep finding good players as well, because you're dropping further and further in the draft as your team gets better. I think the last couple of years has kind of reignited everybody's praise for Sam Presti and all the people working underneath him because of the enormous amount of draft picks that they've managed to get for Paul George, and how quickly they seem to be able to be recovering from what seemed like a death sentence. Now they're a playoff team still, with Chris Paul leading the team. So, they got rid of Russell Westbrook and Paul George, and now they're better. And that's not an easy feat to accomplish. They're not only better now, but they're better positioned for the future with a shit ton of draft picks.
Right now, the Pistons, they are looking at a top five pick potentially.
Yeah.
And even with Blake Griffin on the books, they still have $30 million in salary space. So
at
he's
worst,
gonna have
they will
a lot
have
to
the
work
ninth
with.
Pick. At worst,
they'll have a lot
have
to work with.
And that's important, like, because the Kings are an example of an organization that has drafted high a lot and consistently missed on lottery picks. And when you do that, there is nothing to work with, because you can't trade anybody, because you have nobody anybody wants. And you feel like you're stuck, and you end up having to overpay these guys that aren't worth these contracts, because they're the guys you have. You don't, you're in a small market, so you can't really attract free agents until you become good. And so you're just stuck. And that's why they haven't made the playoffs for 14 years. the Pistons aren't that bad. So I think there's the potential that they could get. They're not that far off, but hopefully you get a guy in like Troy Weaver, and hopefully With his eye for talent, he won't miss on those picks. Or at the very least, he won't make really, really bad pick decisions. So you don't necessarily have to hit on every pick. You don't have to get value at every pick. They don't need to be drafting number one level talent at the number five position. They just need to be drafting number five level talent at the number five position.
I like the way you put that.
Like, don't shoot yourself in the foot, and you'll be okay. Over time, and
best
you get
point
like,
guard available, please.
You get like 3 years available. to before everybody starts getting impatient with you.
But I think that's another thing. Like, we kind of have to like always think about is like sometimes these people don't get the time given to actually turn around a team, right? Because you got to go in there, you got to get people on board with the system that you're trying to put in place, number one. And then number two, it's like sometimes you just don't get along. Like, sometimes people just don't mesh, and like sometimes somebody doesn't like the system and they want to fight against it, and you got to like bring that person around, and you're just not given that time to do that in certain instances. And I think that's always kind of a rough thing just in general.
And that's kind of the worry with that I personally have with some of these underrepresented groups now starting to get chances, because it's always like, you know, how much of a chance are they going to get? Like, what happens if the Knicks hire Becky Hammon and she doesn't get enough time, and then it becomes because for them, and I guess for all of us, it's like it's bigger than just one person getting a chance. It's that they're representative of larger groups. And so want to see them get the time to succeed. You want to see them get backing from their organization, and not just because if things go bad, they're going to be scapegoats. And
And nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that. So,
which is why I will yell from the mountaintops forever. As awesome as I think Becky Hammon would be as the head coach of the Knicks, don't take that fucking job.
Yeah. And I mean, the Bulls' job right now is also under the same level of like, don't touch this.
Yeah. Because no matter what you do, the blame falls on you. Everybody will, like, every ESPN report will start with, I mean, we knew he was a hard guy to work for, or they were a hard organization to work for, but could she have done a better job? It's like, well, I think, you know, this is the problem with putting somebody who's been untested in that position. And
Before we wrap it up, Kaz, Tom Thibodeau, how you feel about it?
I don't care.
All right.
No, nobody's going to be given fucking. You know what? We don't have the time. We don't. We just don't have the time.
Right. Well,
take it home.
I mean, just the last couple stories real quick. The NBA bubble is, I mean, there's still plans for it despite all these COVID tests. They have they've actually figured out like what hotels teams are going to stay at. And the amazing thing they did with this is we were asking like, oh, what kind of home court advantage are, like, home court advantage is gone now that everybody's playing in the same place. So like, what are they going to do to reward some of the better teams? What they did was they gave them the better hotels in Disney World. So the Grand Destino and the Grand, I forgot what the name was, but the other Grand Hotel, those, all the teams that currently have playoff spots, they get to stay in those teams. The five Western Conference invites and the one Eastern Conference invite, the Wizards, they get to stay at the Yacht Club, which I think everybody, you know, once that was announced, everybody started disparaging the Yacht Club. But that's still like a 4-star hotel. But it's like everybody else gets the 5-star hotel. The bad teams get the 4-star hotel. And on top of they got to bring in bigger beds for all these guys because they're all tall as shit. So that's one thing. Mark Cuban is talking about trying to set up some sort of app so that they can allow fans to supply crowd noise from home for some of these games. And I feel like that.
All right. That thing, that specific thing, the stupid fucking fan noise thing. Why are we so stuck on this? Why?
Okay. So the Premier League is back, and I was watching a couple games this week, and they also supply the fake crowd noise. It's not that jarring, but there's like moments throughout the game where it's a little bit jarring, because not only do they try to, it isn't just like normal white noise. Mm-hmm. Like they stick in chants in there, and different songs. And I think what they've done, they might have like taken recordings from old games and they're playing those instead. And it's weird sometimes, like you see there's nobody in the stands, but then you hear songs coming from this supposedly, you know, from a fake crowd. And also, like, whenever somebody scores a goal and you see there's like you hear the crowd cheer. So you know there's like somebody waiting for a goal to score and then like hitting a button for the cheer button. And it's almost like you're watching like a 90s sitcom and watching the laugh track. It's weird. And there's like a delay to it too, because like the goal gets scored and then there's a delay between when somebody recognizes a goal has been scored and when they hit the button, and then when they hit the button to when the cheers actually come out from the speakers. It's weird. It's weird and it's unnecessary. And I don't know, like we don't need this. And if like we all know, like we're living in the COVID era of sports right now. I don't think we need to be insulated from that. And I think it's also when you give a pipeline for random fans to call into things or apply noise or whatever, like there's like 100 different ways this could go wrong.
Yeah.
Like you don't know what they're going to say. You don't, like, unless you actually get like 10,000 of them and then mash them all together, which is not going to sound a whole lot different than like a white noise generator anyways. So it's almost like, what's the point? I still think it would be better if they just, one thing they are allowing people to do, one thing that they are allowing players to do in this NBA bubble is they are allowing players to attend other games besides their own. So what I want to see more than anything else is, you know, LeBron up in the stands heckling other players. Like, I would rather hear that than hear fans, you know, screaming into their phone apps from home. Like, I would rather see and watch, you know, like Russell Westbrook out there talking shit to whoever. Like, I would rather see that than see fans. Like, that would be a very uniquely entertaining thing that we can get out of this COVID era of sports that we won't get at any other time. Like, that's the things that we should be doing. We should be pursuing things that are unique, so that when we look back at this, it's you know, we'll have fond memories of the unique things that happened, good or bad, that happened throughout this time, that people got creative enough to try, rather than all these efforts to try to make things seem like they are the same as before. We're going to watch anyways. It's no matter what. So it's,
I don't know. I might boycott. No, I'm not boycotting anything. I'm going to watch whatever fucking sports are on.
Yeah. I mean, I've been enjoying the Premier League being back, despite all this. And none of DJM's teams are playing because, you know, Rob Manfred is not confident anymore that there's going to be a baseball season, apparently. So, you know, DJM might not even get to see the Tigers play. So, thank you all for continuing to listen to this show. It's been at the very least
been a trying, interesting time that we have been going through.
Yeah, sportsoutsandins.com. We have a lot of stories that we discussed this week, and not all of them in depth. So we'll have links to all of these in our show notes. So check that out. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM. Patreon.com/sportsoutsandins if you want to support the show financially. Thank you to those of you who do. We'll see you next week.